This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9 wishes to advise the following program, Hide and Seek, is a show intended for an adult audience. Generally, our discussions are of a sexual nature and may contain coarse language and references to drugs.
Sit back and enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride. And enjoy the enjoy. And enjoy the enjoy. And enjoy the enjoy. And enjoy the ride.
Laurie Lane is a man who has been an icon of Melbourne's leather scene for many, many years. He's been an MC at just about every leather event at the Let Hotel for as long as I can remember. He's had his own leather shop, he's a set designer, and he's lots of other things too, which we'll explore. Laurie Lane, welcome to Hide and Seek, and thank you for joining us on Joy 94.9.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me, Dean, and a good morning to all of your listeners.
Where did you grow up? Let's start at the beginning.
Oh, born at a very early age, an untold number of summers ago.
You don't let on?
I've just celebrated my 60th birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much indeed. It was a week ago. So, born in England, of all places. Grew up in Southend-on-Sea, which is the owner, or it used to be the owner, of the longest pier in the world.
Right.
1.25 miles long. But unfortunately, one of the council operators forgot to renew the insurance premiums and it burnt down. So now they only have the pylons going out to the
sea. So you've got these sticks sticking out of the water for as long as the eye can see.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so, yes, grew up in England. Started working in theatre when I was 14. Weekly repertory. Every Monday night, a curtain went up on a new show at 7:30.
Does that mean that you identified as being gay at 14? Or do the two not necessarily go hand in hand?
I sucked off the set designer in the Fly Gallery on my first week at the theatre, so that makes me gay from 14.
Okay,
yes.
Got that.
Yes, yes, yes. Never looked back.
And it was never an issue for you back then?
No, I was very lucky. I was the middle of three boys. And my parents, when they found out that I was gay, my father just said, you know, be what you want to be, just don't hurt anybody.
What was Dad?
Dad was a bus driver for the London Transport. Right. Mother was a typist in a bank.
So your theatre background really does start at the beginning.
No, it starts from the age of 7 when my mum didn't like what I spoke like because she thought I didn't speak like proper.
Right.
So I was sent off to elocution lessons.
Okay.
Which was great because the only boy in a class of, you know, girls got all the special roles, the lead roles.
Was Did you hate it at
no,
the
I
time?
No, I loved it. Loved it. Loved the attention.
The attention that speaking well gave you?
Yes, and the ability to communicate and to hold a group of people spellbound, you know. In the elocution festivals, you would recite a poem or a piece, a one-act, a short sort of speech from a play or something. And I just loved the attention. And there were always two spotlights aimed on the centre where you had to stand to address the adjudicating panel, and I loved it. You know, the smell of the grease paint, the roar of the crowd.
And you still do?
I always have done. You know, it's just a magic. You know, I open up the fridge in the morning, the light goes on, I do a 20-minute bracket straight away.
I love that.
Good morning, lamb chop. Hello, orange juice. How are you today?
Yeah. Laurie, tell us about growing up in England. Did you get to travel with your theatre work?
I travelled, first of all, with my parents. They used to take us overseas. I remember at the age of 10 being in Austria, in the city where they filmed Sound of Music, so I saw it first. Yes, went to Paris, travelled a lot. My father used to do interior decorating. He would paint people's houses for extra dollars to take the family away on holiday.
So you did come, although as a bus driver, there was a creative element that was certainly encouraged.
Yes, yes.
Right.
My mother used to make clothes for the family because, you know, they came through the war. I can remember, oh God, this is going to make me sound terrible, my mother unpicking a sweater rolling up the wool, washing it, rolling it into a ball and knitting it up for my younger brother.
Wow.
Yeah. Amazing. I know the value of a dollar. I've been rich and I've been poor, and rich is better. but, yeah, I wouldn't change a moment of it.
Those skills, I guess, you learnt, you've used all of them.
Indeed. Everything my mother, my grandmother did around the house. My older brother was too old to hit. My younger brother was too young to hit. And I was too busy cooking and baking and doing things to be hit. So it was a very good way to be.
That sounds great. So you would classify your childhood and your upbringing as a good one?
Very much so. Very much so. Which has probably made me as comfortable as I am with my sexuality. The fact that my parents accepted it. And, I mean, when I came out here to Australia, I came with a lover. We travelled on the £10 assisted passage. I came out for 3 years to dance for Fiddler.
You were a 10-pound pom.
I'm a 10-pound pom. Sorry, baby, yes.
Wow.
Even though I do sound Australian. I consider Australia home. I always have done from the day I arrived.
How old were you when you came to Australia?
I was 17 when I set foot on
with
Australian.
With your lover?
So, with my lover.
Yeah, wow.
Who was 33.
Wow.
A redheaded Irishman who...
Fantastic. I'm so glad we're having this chat.
You are finding out more about me than half the people I've worked with or lived with have known, but that's fine.
I'm really flattered that you're sharing this part of you with us, and I'm glad that you've come in tonight, because one of the things that I find disturbing is that my generation, and I guess I put myself in a middle generation to where the younger kids are of today, I'm 38, we don't connect very well to the older generation. And I sometimes wonder whether that's because we see you as like a father type figure, or there is some sort of, I don't know, there's this wall between us that we don't get to cross now and again. And I'm glad that you're here, that we can...
Thank you. I think that comes from technology, the advancement of technology, the dreaded lurgy that sort of wiped out many of my generation. A lot of people will look back on that now as being an old man's disease. I don't know whether letting everyone know how old I am has sort of done me a disservice, whether it'll stop people talking to me.
I don't think so.
I hope not. My knowledge, my happiness with my lifestyle comes from people who were generous with their time, handing on the torch of old guard leather, as everyone calls it. It's not old guard leather. I don't give a shit about that. There's old guard, there's new guard. I'm now guard.
And it's interesting you say that, because this is one of my bugbears, is that there's this us and them mentality about men in leather.
It's bullshit.
And the younger guys are looked as being the dress-up crowd. The older guys don't want to tutor, for want of a better word, and advise in safe encouragement of exploration, first and foremost. And it really does create a divide. And I see this whole younger generation growing up with no real resources other than searching online.
Searching online does fucking nothing for
there's,
you.
There's no fostering, I guess.
You need that handing on of the torch. It's like a ballet dancer. You don't sit and look at the notation of the steps. A ballet is handed from foot to foot, from Markarava to the Australian Ballet. That it has to be shown, taught. You have to experience it. You can read a book, but it doesn't mean anything. You can punch it up on the internet. A lot of that is wank. Wanksville, absolutely.
And you can't be a prima ballerina at 15 or at 60. You can still be in the spotlight the whole way through.
Indeed.
But unless you step into the fold and step out of the fold and pass on the knowledge, it doesn't transfer.
I don't look on myself as the guru, okay? I look on myself as a leather man, gay person who has an amazing amount of knowledge that has been given to me.
Who crowned you the know-it-all of leather here in Melbourne?
Oh, what are the laws on defamation at the moment?
Here at Joy, they're very, very tight.
Okay. let's just say that I have been loved and I have been hated. I have been respected. I have been knifed in the back. I have been maligned. But deep down underneath it all, I look at the fact that I'm still here.
How do you push through that?
I love what I do. I love my lifestyle. I love the people I'm around. And I love it when I can hand on some of my knowledge to somebody else. I played with a 19-year-old last week, who makes me look like a novice. He is going to be the most vindictive bastard of a top, but he is magic to watch working. And he's taken some of my ideas and some of my techniques and made them his own.
We're talking to Laurie Lane on Hide and Seek. We'll be back with him in just a moment. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
Hide and Seek.
We're talking to Laurie Lane, who is our guest on Hide and Seek. He has been the host of many a Leatherman contest, and he's been around the traps a bit, and he's sharing a few of his experiences with us here on Joy 94.9. Laurie, you're an amazing set designer. I've got here that not only have you produced and directed so many things, including productions of Les Mis, Hello Dolly, King and I, My Fair Lady, Oliver, Fiddler on the Roof in 95, Forum in 93, Pirates of Penzance in 92. The list goes on and on and on, and that's only for the Geelong Theatre Company. You really have done it all when it comes to theatre, and it's not just set design, we're talking costuming, directing, the whole kit and caboodle.
It came from my weekly repertory beginnings in England. 7:30 on a Monday night, the curtain would go up on a new show. You would do 35 to 40 shows in a row, week after week after week. So Tuesday morning, you would start rehearsing next week's show. You would work from 10 to 5, have a break, then you'd go in and do the play. Wednesday, you rehearsed in the morning. You had a matinee at 1 o'clock of this week's play, and then a performance Wednesday night. Thursday morning, all-day rehearsal. Friday morning, all-day rehearsal. Saturday morning, rehearsal. Saturday afternoon, matinee. Saturday evening, performance. Then everyone would pitch in, pull the set down to a bare stage, so Sunday morning the crew could put the new show up.
And
you would come in Sunday afternoon, you would dress it, you would tech rehearse Sunday night with lighting, Monday morning full dress rehearsal, Monday afternoon open, Tuesday morning start the next play.
Wow.
That's when you learned to be able to fire. You would just read a script down and you would know it. If you didn't, you would paraphrase it.
I was going to ask you, do you think that that technique, those learnt skills, have enabled you to remain, to have a great memory and on stage?
It allows me on a microphone pull an old gag out, you know, turn it to something, change it, bring it into the modern idiom and just fire it, you know, quick, you know, sort of. You get someone in a crowd, you're doing an auction or a show or something, you need to jump on them very, very quickly. Classical ballet from the age of 9, trained dancer.
And you've got a dancer's physique?
In the last 2.5 years, I've gone from a 29 to a 30-inch waist.
Oh, you poor thing.
So pissed off, yeah.
In the last 2 years, I've gone from a 32 to a 36.
I still have a pair of trousers I bought from Rodney Rackham at the Clothes Horse in the Southern Cross the first year I arrived. They're furnishing fabric. They're hipsters. If I breathe in, they fall off my ass.
I hate you.
But they're still in the box.
You must keep fit. How do you do that?
Just by working, by doing what I do. You know, I don't sit down. I eat 2 or 3 donuts a day. I have a bar of chocolate a day. I love Krispy Kremes. They can send some in to us here at the station if they're listening. I've worked for Melbourne Theatre Company. I was an actor, stage manager for Melbourne Theatre Company for 5 seasons. Worked with Frank Thring, Googie Withers.
Now, I recall visiting a shop of yours in Commercial Road.
Commercial Road.
Above the Beat Bookshop.
Yes. I was...
It was the first leather shop I ever went into.
First one in Melbourne. Right. I was working at J.C. Williamson's at Her Majesty's, building sets for MAME and Black and White Minstrel Show and Little Night Music.
And now, you're going back a bit before my time now. So how long was that shop above Beat Bookshop?
I was above the Beat Bookshop for 18 years.
Wow.
Jim Jones, who was Mike Richards' partner, was working with one of the amateur companies here in Melbourne, Festival Theatre Company. I was introduced to them, and through them, they asked me, could I do a repair on a pair of leather trousers? Because I was a frock fairy.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, fine. And Then I made some shorts for them. Then I started making the little lycra G strings that we used to sell at Crystal Tees to all the hens nights.
Yes.
They were very big sellers. They used to really go well. Then Mike said to me one day, come and have a look upstairs. And he had the area upstairs because of the nature of the business.
Sure.
The Jewish gentleman who owned the property wouldn't let him just take the downstairs lease. He had to take upstairs as well because he thought, no one else would want it, my darling. So he offered it to me. He said, do you want to put yourself machine up here and sew for me? I said, I don't have a sewing machine. He said, I've just ordered one, it's coming in. And then I started making for the Beat Bookshop. That's when Laurie Lance Leather World started. And so, taking all my theatre skills, we did basic vests for the shop downstairs, but most people came up and had stuff made by custom.
You did a lot of leather tailoring?
A lot of it's still around. I see it in the bars, I see it at gay days, I see it at midsummer carnivals. It's a joy to know that, you know, by using good materials and making it properly, the stuff is still around. But I loved all that, you know.
Then you disappeared.
Then I disappeared. Yeah, I hit a brick wall. Had a nervous breakdown. I was in the middle of one of the productions in Geelong. I just got to the point I was driving down there, and then I found myself in Horsham.
Wow.
Mm. I just had enough. I'd lost far too many friends. You know, every couple of days you were going to a funeral because of the dreaded. I mean, it really got to the point where you would be thrilled when you were told that, oh, no, it's all right, he died of a heart attack.
Because it was the odd one out.
Yes, it was different. And I found it very hard to say no. I got myself a very bad reputation of not delivering on time because I said yes to too many people. The nervous breakdown made me stop and look at myself and find a new number in my life. Number one, the moment I respected myself, I was able to do more for other people, which I love to do. I was able to be more creative. People now know when I say, I'm sorry, I can't do it, they understand.
And they also know that when you say you can do it, you'll deliver.
Indeed.
And I guess finding one's authentic self is always our challenge.
Very much so.
Being true to ourselves is a daily task, but it gets easier.
Indeed.
And the truer you are to yourself, the easier it gets. It's silly that we don't get this at, you know, 7 years old or something.
In my life, I've had one partner that I came out from England with, my first lover. Mm-hmm. There was another one after that for about 5 years. Then my next partner was 23 years. Then I fell in love with a man in America who works for NASA. So for 7 years, I was traveling backwards and forwards to Cape Kennedy and Mountain View.
That's
when I closed the shop in Paran.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Things were changing. Lots of other shops were opening up. Everyone else was doing leather. You could import it. It was a lot easier. And the fun went out of it for me. The dance parties came and they would walk in on Thursday afternoon wondering why I couldn't make an outfit for them by Saturday. I didn't carry a stock in my workroom. It was a workspace. Mm. You came in, you bought off the end of the cutting table. It was created for you, designed for your body shape, your body height. You know, the thought of thin strips of leather on fat old men never really appealed to me. So I took my dance knowledge of cutting everything high in the crutch so you can move. There's nothing worse than having a crutch down by your knees. You tear the trouser. You know, a garment has to fit on the shoulders, not cut under the arms. It mustn't be too tight on the waist. If you've got wide shoulders, you can do a broad harness. If you've got narrowed shoulders, you do a narrow harness. Some people would be wider in the middle than they are at the top. So you tailor the shaping of the harnesses to take your eye away from the waistline.
But that's about basic design. That's about silhouette. That's about shape and form. And you can't buy that off the rack.
No. When you work for Chris Fredrickson, who used to design for Joan Sutherland, you knew how to make someone who had a 48-inch waist look like she had a 24-inch waist. And it's tricks of the trade.
And carry it well.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. And you've got to be able to get into it and out of it. I mean, I learnt that at Pokies. You know,
and move in it.
12 years at Pokies as set designer, costume designer, and you know, support shadow to Michelle Tozer and Renee Scott. We used to be last person off in the blackout, do your costume change and be back on for the next number. You know, there were zips and Velcros going left, right and centre.
Tell me a bit about your trip to the States, because that's really when we sort of lost touch.
My travelling to the States started in 84, my first trip. I stopped smoking. I was at Melbourne Theatre Company.
After how many years?
Ever and a day.
Yeah.
And, of course, MTC, we were promoing, so we had all the cigarettes we needed. We didn't have to buy them. And instead of having the ashtray and my cigarettes on the top of my desk, the script for that show came out in foolscap rather than quarto, and there wasn't enough space outside the folder. So the cigarettes and the ashtray went on the floor. By the end of the day, there were 2 cigarette butts in my ashtray, not 42. So from that moment on, my smoking stopped. Well, it slowed down. I still enjoy a cigar. I don't smoke a cigarette. I could annoy you now by lighting a cigarette, taking a puff and stubbing it out. It doesn't worry me anymore.
Yeah.
And so once I was actually buying my cigarettes, I started putting that money in a tin. And within a year, I had an airfare to America.
And off you went?
Off I went. Fell in love with San Francisco, Los Angeles, and just went on from there. Found Disneyland.
Hello!
That's another story.
We'll come back to ask Laurie Lane what else he got up to in the US. You're on Hide and Seek. This is Joy 94.9.
Hide and Seek.
Sponsored by Circuit Bar. Circuit.com.au.
My guest this evening on Hide and Seek is Laurie Lane. We're talking about some of the history of Melbourne's leather scene and delving a little deeply into this legend of leather and his life and times. Laurie, you were telling us just before the break that you went to the US and you enjoyed Disneyland for the first time.
Disney is such a perfect creation. Every colour is perfect. The cast there, they're not workers at Disneyland, they're all cast members.
And they believe it.
And I believe it too. You are made to feel welcome. Every person who walks through the front gate is made to feel that Disneyland is there just for them.
It is one of the ultimate brands. And I went out with a boy a long time ago that ran the Melbourne franchise of Disney Special Events, and he used to look after the characters and audition the characters. And unless those kids believe it and can deliver it, they don't get the job.
It's the most amazing thing, the training for each person in each character. You are cast to be a character.
And you
even
own
the
it.
Dance. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. But everything about Disneyland, the cleanliness, the huge park, all the attractions, yes, it's crowded. There are lots of people. But you are people managed without realizing it. The lines onto a ride or an attraction, they move, they snake backwards and forwards. So you're constantly passing people and meeting people. You've got every nationality, every age group.
But you're entertained whilst you're waiting too.
Totally.
You don't realize you're waiting because you're entertained.
It's designed in such a way that you enter an attraction from one area and you come out in a different area and you have a minimum of 3 different vistas to choose from. So you are moved through the park, through the attractions, totally.
Very clever.
Even if you sit at a restaurant, everything is disposable or cleared away. The high-end market restaurants have the china and the plates and all that. But as soon as you leave a table, if you haven't put your stuff on the tray, by the time you think, oh, I should have cleared my table, you turn around, it has been done. You don't see it happen. The busboys clear the plates, the table's wiped, and the chairs are in for the next guests to use the facilities. And it's the most wonderful thing. I would love to bring that over here to show Australians how, you know, that entertainment level can be reached. We've achieved it with Lion King and we're going to do it even more so with Mary Poppins, which is coming very soon.
Yeah, that looks pretty exciting.
Oh, magical, magical.
Now tell us about the drag queen.
Well, drag queen.
We know a bit about your leather personas, but we don't know much about Lois.
The incomparable Miss Lois Lane. Compare bon vivant, raconteur, and not quite as famous as Joan Collins. Titian red hair, jungle red nails, 6'5", perfect height for a drag queen. Used to...
Clean shaven?
Oh.
Never.
2.5 hour makeup. A cross between Alexis Carrington and Sable Colby.
Stunning.
Oh, to die for. gowns, just, you know, the most beautiful. When you're a frock fairy, you can run them up on the singer quite quickly. She compared at Crystal Tea. She compared at Body Rock. Appeared at Pokies in St Kilda for Jan Hillier. Had her own show at Duke's Bar and Diner in Richmond.
Wow.
Along with the Troll Dolls and Kerry Lagore and her twin sister as well.
Wow.
Yes, we go back a long way. We used to do the shows at Duke's. We organised the Gay Olympics at Olympic Park during one of the gay days. Then Jan brought the entire show from Pokies over to Olympic Park for the afternoon event. That was an amazing day, you know. You had the Laird with a reproduction of the back bar selling alcohol. Just about every gay venue in Melbourne that was a member of the Melbourne Gay Business Association was represented with stalls. Nancy, Little Miss Nancy, was there as well teaching. All the shops had stalls. Names escape me now because, you know, that was so long ago. But all the leather clubs from Melbourne, the bike clubs, Jackaroos, Cruisers, they were all there. They were doing Harley rides around the Oval, around the Tan track. It was an amazing, amazing time.
We'll go back to your time in America very shortly.
America was an eye-opener for me, you know, to see that many people. You would walk down Castro Street in San Francisco and there were leather men holding hands and kissing in the street and nobody flinched. It was heaven, you know. The city is home to me. It's called the city and I get back there as often as I can.
We're going to take a little break, Laurie, but we'll be back with you in just a moment.
Magic.
Hide and seek.
We're back with Laurie Lane. Thanks again for joining us on Hide and Seek.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Now, tell us a bit about what happened to you in the States. This is where you really grew up, isn't it?
I found my lifestyle.
Had your eyes opened.
I've been blessed here in Melbourne. Mike Richards said, you know, I needed to go out more. And he arranged to take me to the Wayside in South Melbourne. We arrived there and I was in my little preppy Melbourne Theatre Company clothes. And he sort of said, no. Take this. He took his leather jacket off and made me wear it to go into the bar.
How old were you?
I was...
Roughly?
Late teens.
Right. Okay.
A legal age to go into a bar.
Sure.
And the bar was full of men in motorcycle gear. All right. Some of them had come in their Rovers, taken the helmet out of the trunk, the boot, and come into the bar. But that was when men needed an excuse to meet. The only way they could meet in large numbers in public was to have a club or a group. So that's where the motorcycle clubs in Melbourne started.
Nice.
And I was introduced to the Jackaroos, the dirtiest, sluttiest group of men it's ever been my joy to sleep with, fuck with and play with. They did the first warehouse party here in Melbourne, in South Melbourne, in an old bluestone building. They had a play space up in the loft. You had to climb up this rickety ladder, but once you got there, it was worth it. They were selling
the only way up and down to this play
ladder.
Space with the one ladder.
One ladder.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I love it.
Trust me. John Barningham was president at the time. He was one of the directors of the Sullivans, and that's where we got to meet all of the television stars and bring them in to the Laird when we did all the Laird auctions to raise money for VAC and the David Williams Fund. Through Jackaroos, my leather lifestyle grew. Mike had me in the workshop upstairs sewing leather. Laurie Lane's leather world was growing. People were coming out of the woodwork. They were suddenly feeling comfortable. They could come into my workroom, and it was rather like the atmosphere here. It was very comfortable, one-on-one, and people opened up to their deepest sexual desires, and I was able to make for them what they needed. Through that, we started importing magazines into the shop downstairs. Drummer, In Touch, Blue Boy, Bound and Gagged, Dungeon Master.
And that helped with your inspiration?
Helped with my inspiration, helped creation. With my contacts. Yep. On my first trip to America, we actually went to a shop in Chicago, which was run by Tony de Blas, who is known through the literary world as Fledermaus. what a man. I mean, you know, what he didn't know about leather sex and mind play. He was a psychologist, so he had more letters after his name than the alphabet, you know. He then bought the Drummer magazine. Through that, I was invited to go and appear at Drummer and be co-compere 1 year. In America. So I worked with Lenny Broberg, who is now Officer Broberg, one of San Francisco's highest rating police officers, openly gay and proud of it, and has the respect of all the gangs and all the drug addicts in San Francisco.
And he was your co-compere?
He was my co-compere, yeah. Wow. So, you know, Mr. Marcus in the paper sort of said, dueling divas, the Aussie tornado arrives to take over, which was nice. So yeah, you know, I was greeted on stage by the biggest bouquet of gladiolas from Lenny as I walked out.
And a baptism of fire.
Oh, totally, totally, you know. So the first thing I said was, you know, well, gentlemen, you know, I love being here in America, and I finally cracked your hanky code. Hanky in the left pocket means I like to get fucked. Hanky in the right pocket means I really like to get fucked a lot. And, of course, there were all these zzzz from the tops in the room, but by the end of the evening, we were fine.
Right.
From that, we had competitions here in Melbourne, in Brisbane, in Adelaide and Canberra, and we actually took a contestant to Drummer in 1990. Clive Platman, a Melbourne contestant, took out the international world title of Mr. Drummer 1990.
It's a big call.
The second year, our Australian winner was from Sydney, and he took out first runner-up.
Andrew...
No, not Andrew. Andrew was International Mr. Leather.
Right.
That was another saga.
Yes.
America is so contest orientated, you know, sash queen heaven.
Right.
It's really
right.
insane.
Andrew Lennox, porn star extraordinaire. We're referring to,
yes, he was one of our entrants from the Laird competitions.
Right.
He was our third IML contestant.
Once. Go on.
1980, if you want to talk IML,
yeah,
International
yeah,
Mr.
Yeah.
Leather, I am 1980, Patrick from Sydney was our first entrant to IML. Then we had Brent Lacey, who was from the Laird here in Melbourne from one of our competitions. Then Andrew. Then Brian. And last year, Malcolm Guest, who was in Mr. Laird Leather. He was over there representing us in Chicago.
You'll be interested to hear, Laurie, that IML announced only last week that they will be banning all sales of barebacking paraphernalia, and they've taken quite a strong stance in not allowing any retailers to vend barebacking titles or encourage
that. Will be almost half of the vendors at their leather market. Barebacking in America is rife. It worries me. It really does.
They acknowledge that it may affect them, but they believe that it's a stance that they have to take.
Chuck Renslow, who created IML 32 years ago, is a great supporter of the community, and he, like myself, has been to too many funerals. So I can understand his stance on that.
How do you feel Melbourne and its leather community is going these days? It's had a bit of a reinvigoration, if you like.
A rebirth, yes,
yeah.
Thankfully. It's still fractionalised, unfortunately. There is still that ageist thing, but it is starting to blend. With bars like Circuit and the Laird, it's starting to come back together again. We're getting people off those fucking computers. You know,
it's a hard call to do that.
Oh, please, you know, come and relearn the art of
communication,
social skills, you know.
Cruising.
Yeah, you know, I mean, all right, you meet someone on the net at 2 o'clock in the morning, they travel from Sunshine all the way across to Oakley, they fuck themselves stupid. Would you like a Coke? Would you like a soda? Would you like a coffee? And they look at each other. That art of conversation is magical.
Wow.
Well, I mean, I'm computer illiterate, okay? I cannot download a JPEG. If people haven't had a reply to their emails, I'm sorry, I'm still getting used to it, all right? I cannot send an SMS on a cell phone.
You found the on button.
Oh, yes. Oh, look, I can use it. You know, I can get my messages from Message Bank. This is not a problem. It's a very old Nokia. The reason being I'm going blind, and anything smaller, I won't be able to see the screen. And also, I've got fat fingers and I wouldn't be able to punch up the numbers. You know? You see so many people on the train now with a pen or a needle touching the thing because it's so tiny. Yeah. But I think now with the way the Melbourne scene is reinvigorating, we're doing a lot of things at the Laird at the moment, you know, hands-on experimental stuff. We've got Spit and Polish on Thursdays, and I've just done Get Knotted, which was a free event during our week of leather, which is going to be repeated and added to in Melbourne Leather Pride.
Fantastic.
In September. I limited the numbers to 25 because
now,
I thought
that
was
a demonstration
enough.
Or an instructional, or is that an introduction?
It's
or?
An introduction. The first one was called Get Knotted. Mm-hmm. The next one is Get Knotted Part 2, an extra length. So for people who
Fantastic.
Want to apply, it will be limited numbers again. It'll be a free entry thing. It's my thing of handing on my knowledge. The boys at the Laird have been great. They've organised it. They've picked up the cost of the advertising. They've picked up the cost of the venue. And we are just sort of going it. You don't have to be a patron at the Laird to come to these. Unfortunately, being a male-only venue, I can't sort of allow ladies to join us. But, you know, we will do something somewhere else, you know, because the women like being tied up just as much as the men.
I think it's really important to share one's knowledge. And I am conducting an introduction to fisting at Circuit Bar in one of their theatres as part of Melbourne Leather Pride. And there aren't enough people that are willing to, I guess, put their neck on the line and share what it is that they enjoy the most. And when we don't share, what we actually do is restrict people from their own learning and finding out more information themselves. And when they do that, they can go down paths that are incorrect, they can find bad information, and they can make silly mistakes.
It's all a matter of handing on the torch, as we said earlier. But the thing I love, it's allowing people to explore those deep, dark thoughts that they've had. They may have seen a movie, they may have read a book, they may have read an article in a magazine, and they think, I'd like to try that. Where the fuck do they go? Who do they trust? That is the big word in my life at the moment, trust. Consent and trust really go side by side.
Very
you cannot
much.
Have one without the other. And until you've understood that, I don't wish anyone to have consent and trust destroyed in their life. But you have to have a bit of a shaking to understand what it really means. And if I can give people a safe environment to work with, you know, that's why people come over to my place at home. You know, I play at home. I allow people just to relax into whatever they want. I'll tie them up and tickle them. I'll just hold them and cuddle them. I don't care. It's allowing people to do what they want to do, to be what they want to be. You're not going to learn it on the internet. So get out there, you know. Find new people, you know, who want to play, who want to learn. Not everyone wants to fist. Not everyone wants to get into water sports. But it's not going to say that they're not going to appreciate watching it while they're being fucked stupid in a sling beside them.
Laurie Lane, thank you so much for your generous time with us on Hide and Seek this evening. I have been privileged to have you come and talk to us tonight. It's been an honour, and I'm so glad that you did.
It's my pleasure. I'm here to hand on my knowledge to the community. Anytime I can help you or your listeners in any function or fundraiser or just sharing of knowledge, I'm only a phone call away. Thank you for allowing me to be here tonight.
Laurie Lane joining us here on Hide and Seek. This is Joy, 94.9.
Hide and Seek.
Sponsored by Circuit Bar. Circuit.com.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.